Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 237, recorded December 1st, 2011. Enterprise Zombies. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Go to Assist Express. Being in IT and not using the right tools can be disastrous. That's why you need Go to Assist Express, the leader in remote support. You can try it free right now. Visit gotoassist.com/windows. And by the Epson Workforce Pro, the world's fastest two-sided printer. Engineered for productivity, it delivers high-speed, automatic, two-sided color printing, copying, scanning, and faxing to keep your business running at full speed. Plus, you'll save on ink. The Epson Workforce Pro. Check it out at Epson.com. And by Audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/windows. It's time for Windows Weekly. Yes, I'm back, and so are Mary Jo and Paul. I'm Paul Thurrott from the Supersite for Windows, WindowsSupersite.com. Mary Jo Foley of all things Microsoft.com on the ZDNet blogs. Good to see you both. Happy December, first day of December.
It was like November never happened.
It was. Except it's a beautiful, crisp day back east, I know.
Yeah, but November was like November was the warmest November on record.
Really?
Here.
Wow. Yeah. So that means we'll have a horrid freezing December, probably.
Exactly. Yeah. You would make an excellent New Englander.
Well,
that's exactly the right way to think about
it. I checked
that.
The old farmer's almanac, and it looks like it's going to be a hell of a winter. Actually, I'm going to be, I'm going to be out your way, Paul. I'm going to be in Massachusetts. Well, I'm going to be in Western Massachusetts for Christmas. I'm looking forward to that.
That is not the way, but
it's not even close. It's like 2.5 hours.
It's closer to Mary Jo than it is to me. Yeah. Where in Western Mass?
I'll be in Stockbridge.
Stockbridge, wow.
That's Norman Rockwell's home. And we're going to the Norman Rockwell Museum.
Mm-hmm.
Should be fun.
What's out there?
Nothing's out there.
Well, I mean, do you have family?
Family, yeah.
Yeah.
It'll be a lovely, lovely New England Christmas. I hope we have snow and sleigh bells.
I hope we don't, but good luck. May the best man win.
You'll probably win. No, I'll win, but only over your dead body. So, yeah. So hello, everybody. Thank you to Iaz for filling in for me last week. Mm-hmm. He's going to have to do it again next week because I'm going to be in Paris on next Thursday.
Okay.
For Le Web, but I think he does a fine, fine job. I do have, it's funny, when I miss one week, so much happens.
Well, not to mention that last week was an early show, too, so
right.
I feel like we haven't done this.
It's been a while. Yeah, we did it Monday of last week.
Like I said, November never existed.
We skimmed right through it because of Thanksgiving.
It was another September.
Mary Jo Foley, actually, this is a Win Supersite exclusive, isn't it?
It's not on the web. I saved it for this podcast.
You saved it just for us?
You know what bugs me is I actually had two exclusives and someone else broke the other one.
Damn.
But I have this one left.
Well, I know we're all a Twitter, so to speak.
We will soon literally be a Twitter.
What is the scoop?
Okay. With the understanding that things can change. In fact, one of the interesting things about the story is that how they're going to handle this is very hotly debated within Microsoft still today. But as of this week, the plan internally at Microsoft is for ARM-based versions of Windows 8 not to include the Windows desktop and not to have any facility for running desktop apps. And that Microsoft sees this, well, the parts of Microsoft that have apparently agreed to this, see this as their kind of pure play iPad-style tablet answer. And that if you want a full Windows computer, they still have those, and you'll be able to run an Intel tablet that will have the desktop and all that stuff. But like I said, anything could change because there are a lot of people at Microsoft, in the same way that we debate, what should the ARM version look like? Should it have the desktop or shouldn't it? This same debate is apparently going on still to this day inside of Microsoft. But as of now, the people that don't want there to be a desktop have apparently won the day.
And
so can I ask a question? I'm dying to ask a question about that.
Sure.
I have a lot of questions about this, actually. But so, you know, this is like the 180 degree reverse of what they were saying at Build, right? At Build, they were showing ARM tablets that had the desktop.
Well,
so this is just a complete change.
They were, but that was, of course, a, you know, early prototype. And, you know, I think from a code simplicity standpoint, it was probably easier not to have it be any different from the builds they were doing for, you know, for Intel. So my guess is, and this is just a guess, is that as we get closer to what the final release is going to be, these things are going to have to necessarily fork in some way. You know, one of the other things in researching the ARM stuff, after I was told this, I went back to look at what I had written and you know, what else had been out there before. And one of the things I saw in a story that I wrote was a quote from, remember, Intel CEO Paolo Tellini had broken some information about the ARM-based versions of Windows before Build. And he said, and of course, he's trying to position the Intel version as being superior, right, as the win-win version, the one that can do everything. And he was saying that the ARM-based, that there really is no such thing as an ARM-based version of Windows 8 because you have to custom tailor that OS to every one of the ARM chipsets, that essentially they're almost like per-device versions of Windows 8 and are therefore very highly specialized. And I think when I kind of combine what he says with what I just heard, that makes sense to me, you know, that as we get closer to release, you know, for these things to work on those particular ARM-based tablets, you know, they're going to have to make almost what essentially boils down to a very highly customized version of Windows 8. So I think
What about Windows 8 netbooks? I mean, notebooks, you know, I mean, are they going to have the desktop or no desktop?
I didn't discuss anything like that. I mean, you mean like an ARM-based notebook, if they were to be
You know, because remember there was a story in DigiTimes, it was, I think, late last week, early this week, saying ARM-based notebooks, not the tablets, the notebooks, were going to be delayed till 2013.
Yeah, I didn't.
So I wonder, are they going to have desktop?
Well, the exact, I can get it as close as possible, what I was told exactly was that the most recent builds of Windows 8 on ARM do not have the desktop, was the way they described it. I actually didn't even think about it in terms of notebooks. I hear that and I think tablets. So I'm sort of, maybe I'm adding that bit of information myself. They were just talking literally about the latest build. So I suppose that could impact those as well. I don't know.
It's not the kind
I'm
of thing.
I'm actually really happy. I'm happy
why,
about
why, Mary Jo? Well, why?
Yeah, I am too, by the way.
Yeah, because I think Microsoft was trying too hard to be everything to everybody with Windows 8. And, you know, if you really want to have an iPad competitor in the form of an ARM tablet, you shouldn't support legacy apps. You should cut the cord and say, only Metro apps, and this is it. Sorry, if you want legacy apps, go with Intel. If you don't, come with a new, clean, fresh build, right?
Right. I agree with that 100%. I think one of the most awful things they could do, I mean, imagine if the iPad could run Mac OS X apps poorly. You know, imagine if that was part of the deal.
Yeah.
Well, how stupid would that be?
Yeah.
Microsoft to do that wrong.
I was skeptical too, actually. I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah. I'm just telling you what I heard. I mean, my own opinion is that this is the right decision, but that has nothing to do with what I heard. I do hope that this is how it ultimately comes out. It is the right decision. I mean, there are questions around how you know, market these things. It is a little strange, you know, you're calling this thing Windows. So it's Windows like this Windows, but it doesn't do this stuff. And, you know, there's some weirdness there. But I think it would be even worse for Microsoft to ship ARM devices, whatever they are, notebooks or tablets, that had a desktop, because that would confuse people even further, because now they would expect, just by looking at it, you would say, well, it's Windows. Obviously, it will run these apps. You know, all the millions of apps that are out there on the internet to download, they would expect that. You know, but when you don't, when you just provide that Metro style UI, by looking at it, you can tell you're doing something different. And I think that sends the right message. I think it's the right way to do it.
Yeah. And when I asked them about this whole thing back at Build, it was really confusing because I thought, okay, so desktop apps on ARM are going to be legacy apps that somehow get reported or rewritten to run on ARM tablets. So why would you even do that? Why not just make that a Metro app, right?
Right. I mean, That was always the question. And people will come and say, well, yeah, but, you know, there's this command line ARM compiler that could technically allow you to create a what would be basically a Win32 app on ARM or whatever. And it's like, guys, seriously, like this is – I mean, I suppose you could come up with a reason why this would make sense in some certain category. You know, maybe if you did something like you know, Steve Gibson, for example, has that drive, that disk tool that he has, right? Maybe you would want a version of that that would run on these devices for whatever reason, because essentially it is a PC, even though it's kind of an ARM chipset. And, you know, if he could compile that app to run on those systems, that would make his tool more valuable to people or whatever. You could kind of make those kind of arguments. But on the flip side, you know, I think that these things are devices. They should be simpler. And that's the type of thing that, you know, normal people won't be doing on a device, you know. I just don't think it's necessary.
Mary Jo, you said this was a change, though, from their previous plans.
The previous plan was, I was told, because this was a big controversy right after build. Everybody was like, can you run desktop on ARM tablets? Right. And we didn't get to really play with any Windows 8 ARM tablets. They were under glass at build. So you couldn't really try it out and see what was there.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, they kept saying, yes, it is. That's what we're going to do. We're going to have desktop on Windows 8 on ARM because we're going to have the exact same experience, whether you're on Intel or ARM. And I was really against that. I was like, oh, I think that's a mistake. But okay, that's what they're going to do. So I'm really happy they're changing their mind on this. I just wonder if it'll set them back at all schedule-wise.
Which brings us to
the next story.
More Windows 8 tidbits. Next Web says that there will be no Windows 8 beta till late February 2012.
Yeah, I've not heard this yet or at all, but I would just say that we've talked about the schedule and what it could have been and should have been. And if it's different from that, that to me indicates delay. You know, and the first indication of delay that I got was I was told explicitly that the first build we were going to get of Windows 8 publicly would be feature complete, and that's what they were going to release at build. And that's not what they released at build. You know, again, following the schedule for the previous release of Windows, CES is the obvious launching point for beta. I do expect them to demonstrate the beta or something akin to the beta, you know, a newer build at CES to show some kind of forward momentum there. But if they don't release the beta until late February, which I think is what they're saying, you know, that's a couple of months difference, basically. That's a big delay.
Yeah.
Why?
I have been hearing no beta at CES. I have been hearing that for like a month or so from my contacts.
And that's,
I hadn't heard
that's early
February.
January.
Yeah. I hadn't heard February, but I'm not that surprised that it might be February. I just think when we saw the developer preview, I mean, it needs a lot of work to get to beta, and there's not going to be multiple developer previews. It's going to go developer preview, beta, release candidate.
So yeah, and how artificial is that necessity, right? why? No, seriously. I mean, why couldn't there be an update to the developer preview that ships in December that has updated versions of the APIs, which, of course, would be the important bit, but also maybe some additional stuff that's going to be in Windows 8 that isn't in that build? I mean, you know, they've very artificially determined we're going to do one of these and one of these and one of these, and then we're going to ship it. And it's like, you know, that's cute, but you don't have to do it that way. And I think there are good reasons not to do it that way, right? It's just completely made up. You know, we're going to have one of each. Okay.
But, you know, the other thing in the Next Web's report that I'm not totally convinced of is they say, okay, so if it's late February, that means Windows 8 is going to be late. Okay, so everybody's been predicting, you know, it's going to RTM around mid-year to Q3. I don't think it has to be late, because if you look at how they do Office, and Office is where a lot of the people who work on Windows came from, they do a beta, and then like a month to a month and a half later, release candidate, right? I mean, there doesn't have to be
In other words, right, the beta is feature complete, thus getting to RC really only requires you to fix some bugs and respond to some feedback. That's possible. One of the sources who's been pretty good for me told me that the general availability at Microsoft, I should point out, the general availability of Windows 8 would be late August. And if you kind of backpedal from that date and think about it, you know, and just pretend that late February is correct, you know, and you look at the amount of time between February and August is 6 months. And you could deliver a release candidate somewhere in the middle and then say you need like 60 to 90 days for the RTM before that. So maybe, you know, May, June, you could see like, okay, you know, it could happen. The only thing is, it's hard having not seen personally any of these updated builds that they've been working on over time, what kind of progress they've made. You know, like Mary Jo said, the developer preview that we have is pretty rough. You know, it's stable enough and all that. It's, you know, compared to Windows 7, it's got all the Windows 7 stuff. But the new stuff, which is the important bit, you know, the Metro style UI, is rough. You know, there's a lot of stuff that's not doesn't work correctly or is not implemented at all. You know, we know that the mousing stuff doesn't work. We know that that special zoom mode where you can kind of look down at your entire desktop and organize things and give groups names and stuff. You know, it's not, that stuff's not even there. So I think there, you know, there's kind of a positive feedback loop that should be occurring that's not. And the longer you go between the desktop of the developer preview and then that first beta, whether it's January or February, that's a long amount of time. You know, a lot of time between those two releases. I wish there were more releases and more chances to provide feedback about how it's going.
Remember back when they did Windows 95, I mean, way back when, but they used to do a build every week.
Oh, I remember those days fondly. When Windows 98 came out, I had just gotten broadband living in Phoenix, and I used to download that build every Friday. That was when they did it. It was Friday night. Like those guys would go home for the weekend or whatever. We would hammer away at the build, but I could download that thing in 10 or 11 minutes because I was like one of six people in Phoenix that had broadband at the time or whatever it was. So you had like the whole pipe to yourself.
Ah, the good old days. And, yes.
Oh, it was awesome.
I remember having the first to have a cable modem. It was amazing.
Yeah. Oh, the day I got Monday, you know, cable at 9 a.m. on Monday, the first day you could get it in Phoenix. And Phoenix was the first major.
It was early. I remember.
City in the U.S. that had it. And it was like a house full of like those white suited Intel guys. You know, it required, I think I had 13 guys from my house that day.
In bunny suits.
They were going down the street and looking at the wires. And, you know, it was like alchemy. Yeah. But, you know, it was awesome.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I miss that. I mean, I don't expect a new build every week. Every 2 months, 3 months, that would be nice.
All right. We are going to have a Windows 8 store. We know that, right?
Yep.
We shall find out
but
more.
But next week, we're going to hear more.
Like what? What do you suspect?
I don't know. It's an event Microsoft's having on December 6th in San Francisco. So I don't think Paul's going. I'm not going. There's going to be some developers there and some local San Francisco press there.
I guess we should send somebody. We'll send somebody down.
Yeah. It's called the Windows Store Preview event.
My guess is they're going to open the store.
Oh.
Yeah.
I think they're going to let the first, or at least announce the plans for doing it. You know, they had said at Build that they would open this thing before the final release, and I think kind of implied the beta would be the obvious time to do it, but you know, one of the big issues with Windows 8 is we don't have any of these apps. And we know that developers have been working on the Metro apps, you know, since Build came out and since they got the developer preview. So hopefully we can see some of the fruits of this work quickly, you know, sooner rather than later. And that's one of the things that could enable that to happen.
Yeah. And, you know, there was just that report out this week from Forrester saying, Now users aren't as interested in Windows tablets as they were in the early part of this year. And, you know, this may be partially a response to that, right? Like, show people what they can get and what they can expect. What kinds of things are you going to be able to get, even if you can't get the tablet yet?
Yeah, maybe. But, you know, I also, of course, anytime you see something like that, this is an opportunity for someone to write one of two stories, which is, you know, Forrester is correct. You know, people don't want these things anymore. Or Forrester is wrong that, you know, there's still plenty of demand for Windows tablets. And here's why. You know, it's in the absence of actual product, it's kind of hard to say what people will or will not do when those things become available. I do think there's a lot of pent up demand for Windows on a tablet. And I know that's the type of thing that, you know, iPad fans would scoff at. But I just think that's the case. I mean, I think it's neat to be able to, you know, lug around something really small and light and then bring it home and dock it and have a full desktop sitting there. I think that's going to be a big deal to people. And that's true if it comes out 2 months from now or 12 months from now, you know. But yeah, I mean, they need to show forward momentum. No doubt about it.
What would you like to see in a Windows store? Would you want to see more than Microsoft products, right? You want to see I tell you what would be nice in the Mac App Store is if every app that I use were there.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Because then
the ability to go, right. You install a new version of the OS, or you buy a new computer.
Well, I just did that. Exactly.
Right, so the first thing you do is go to that store.
And update.
It has a list of everything you've ever bought, and you go click, click, click.
Will Microsoft do the same thing with licenses that Apple does, essentially saying you can run this on any computer that, you know, you logged into that account with?
Well, up to X number of computers, yeah. Yeah, they're doing that.
That's exactly. Up to five, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Will they, and you think they will approach third-party developers? I imagine they will and say...
Oh, no, they already have. That's the plan.
That's a given. And will they sell their premium stuff like Office there? I presume so.
They'll have to. The question is, of course, you know, Office does not fall into this licensing paradigm currently, you know, for the most part. I was actually very intrigued. In fact, I'm curious if Mary Jo had ever seen this before. I was visiting the Microsoft Store online the other day, as we all do all the time, because it's such a fantastic online destination. And
they have one, really? I didn't even know.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, exactly. So hopefully someday people will know about it. But it's an interesting place. They sell those signature PCs, which are fantastic. But on the flip side, the signature PCs, unfortunately, tend to be a little on the older side. You know, they're not always necessarily the very latest, you know, computer. So, for example, there's a 13-inch HP that was really well-priced, and I went and looked at the reviews. It looked great, and then you realize this isn't the brand-new one. It's the one that came out in the spring. But you know, maybe it was around the Black Friday, Cyber Monday stuff. I was looking at the site, and what I noticed was you can buy Office electronically from Microsoft, which is not a shocker. But if you buy, I think it was this, it's not called Small Business, but it might just be called the Business version, and then they have a Professional Plus or Professional version or Professional Plus. There were actually two versions of each, and there was one that was licensed for one computer and then one that was licensed for two, which is kind of an interesting take on the way that Office used to always be, which was one of those hidden licensing wonderfulnesses about Office was you could actually buy one copy of it, and they allowed you to put a second version on a portable computer, the notion being that you would have one at work, perhaps, and then one on a laptop that you might bring home. And so I wasn't aware that they were doing that, that was like an option. You know, you could buy two different versions. So if you ever...
I didn't know that either. Nope. Yeah. I didn't know that. Or maybe I forgot it if I knew it.
I don't think I'd ever heard of it.
They had the home licensing rights. That's what you're talking about, right? For Office, where you could have it on your work machine and then also get rights to run it at home.
Yeah.
I'm trying to look
at that. Yeah, essentially. Right. Exactly right. So... Yeah. Aside from home and the home and student version, which is completely different, right? That one you can install on up to three computers. They actually give you three license keys. The so-called, you know, professional versions, the business versions. If you go to store.microsoft.com and you look at you know, the Office software, you'll see they have two purchase options. And you buy it electronically, or you can buy it electronically. You can buy a box too, but I believe you can actually download for each of those a version that is literally one copy install, which is kind of typical for software, expensive software, and then one that is two. You know, it seems like a new option to me. I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, but to your point on the store, you know, what Microsoft said at Build about the store was only Metro apps can be downloaded from the store.
From the store directly, but, right?
Right, from the store directly. Legacy apps, you just have a link and some promotion, right? But you couldn't actually download the full version of Office from the store unless they do a Metro version.
Unless they do a Metro version, right. And actually, the important distinction there is that classic desktop apps, you know, legacy apps or the apps we run today, as we might call them, are not beholden to whatever the terms are for the store for Metro apps. So when we were talking about those five PC installs and all that kind of stuff, only applies to Metro apps. Apps that will be hosted on the store itself by Microsoft, right? So it's kind of an interesting thing. You know, Office today is licensed very differently. And so, you know, this is one of those many questions we have about Windows 8, I suppose, is, you know, for the next version of Office, will there be a Metro version of it? Or can they simply bypass that restriction by saying, look, it's essentially a desktop app. Yes or no, there is a kind of a Metro front end that comes with it. But because it's a desktop app, you don't get to install this thing on up to five computers. And I could picture them doing that. The problem is when Microsoft does it with their Premiere app, that kind of stinks, right? It kind of pulls the carpet out from under the whole beauty of the store, you know? I have to give Apple some credit. They did the right thing with their own store when they brought it to the Mac, where they allow you, you know, they put all of their iLife apps, not just as a suite, but individually as well, where before that you could never buy them individually. And you can install them onto whatever the number of PCs or Macs or whatever that they allow. And that's the right way to do it. So I'm obviously not very hopeful, or not very, I don't really expect it, but I hope that Microsoft does the right thing as well with their own store.
Yeah. You know, one other way they could do that too, just thinking out loud about this, is there was an option with Office 2010 called Starter, where yes. Microsoft enabled OEMs to actually put a very stripped down couple of Office apps, preload them on new PCs. And then if you, the user, wanted them, you could go and unlock them with a downloadable key. Yep. And then I believe they download it straight to your PC. So they maybe could get around the limitation that way too, with something like that.
Yeah, by having a Starter equivalent that was a Metro app. And that would be freely installed. It's basically ad supported anyway.
Yeah.
And it only includes Word and Excel.
Sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, anything that Microsoft does to kind of usurp its own store, you know, if the only way you can get OneNote and PowerPoint and Outlook and whatever else is to pay a lot of money, and then you lose that five PC thing, it's kind of tough. I hope they do the right thing by consumers and offer these things, you know, the way they should through the store with that kind of licensing. I think that's the right way to go. You know, it's the right way to do it going forward.
I have another question for you, Paul, about this whole thing. You know, one interesting thing to me about the choice of date of them doing this is December 6th. That is the same date that Xbox goes live, right?
Exactly,
the Xbox dashboard goes live. So what do you think about the idea that the app tab on the new dashboard could be the same as the store?
When you said December 6th, I had not heard of this event. And so as you were saying it, you said December 6th, and I thought, that's interesting. That's a big day for Microsoft people, because that's the Xbox 360 dashboard update. I think that it makes sense that these things would have a common back end. Obviously, they're all tied to your Windows Live ID. I think that would be, I think that makes plenty of sense. Yeah. That maybe that's what has to happen. You know, that there's this, you know, on December 5th, the Xbox Live will go down for an hour or something overnight so they can do this switchover. Because this back-end Microsoft store that they're using is the same for all of these things. You know, the Zune Marketplace, the Xbox Live Marketplace, and then, of course, the Windows Store. Yeah. Speculation, but it makes sense.
You wouldn't expect the Windows Store on Xbox, though.
No, what we're saying is...
what if they all have the same back-end?
They all have the,
they're the same store.
Servers.
Well, you know, you think about... we don't know this. I don't know this. Maybe you do, but if... you look at the Mac App Store and you look at the iTunes Store and you think, well, they didn't make it look like it. I mean, it's the same thing behind it. You know, they didn't re-engineer the buying of software, and they're using the same servers, aren't they? I mean, doesn't that make sense?
Yeah. And you can use the same account if you want. So they have the same credit card online and all that.
So
I don't know what the backend looks like, but.
No, we don't. But you can kind of imagine.
So that might be why they tie those together, because they're going to shut down the server anyway that night, December 5th, and they bring it all up at the same time, and it all gets so exciting.
Yeah, why not?
Why not?
And
so that would lend credence to the idea that the announcement December 6th will not merely be a pre-announcement. It will actually be, here it is.
Could be either one. But, you know, the problem is once you go live with a story, there are people out, you know, it's on the internet, so people can ping it and they can look at things. And, you know, someone might have found a clue that, oh, look, the Windows Store is in there. And, you know, maybe this preemptively allows them to make the announcement rather than have it happen from some hacker website or whatever. Because, that, you know, that's what would happen.
Because they know that Gabe Rivera's out there or whatever. It's Rafael Ramirez, whatever the Brandon Gabe Watson. Kaplan,
whatever his name
they
is.
Know he's out there.
Yeah.
They know what's his name? Rafael.
He is. He's like a ghost.
Yeah. He's the ninja. He's out there. And he'll be checking and pinging and dinging and winging. Hold the rod, Mary Jo Foley. We're talking Windows. I want to talk about you didn't. You could have brought it up in the same context, but I do want to talk about Office on the iPad when we come back in just a second. Don't sit there. Zip it. Zip.
Okay.
Because I got to do a commercial right now. Zip. Zip it. Time to talk about GoToAssist Express from Citrix. They've got a big, and it's so hard for me. Nobody should ever tell me anything that they don't want me to talk about because it's so hard for me to keep a secret. Do not tell me your secrets. Citrix has shown me the next edition of GoToAssist Express, and it's so awesome. I just want to tell you all about it. But I'll tell you what, here's the beauty of this, and this is one thing I love about Citrix. When they add features, as they have many times to GoToAssist Express, you just get it. It's automatic. You know, it's part of the deal. They don't raise the price. They don't, it's just there. And I just love it. So what is GoToAssist Express? It is remote access for IT professionals. You know, if you're in IT and you're not using the right tool to diagnose, to access, and resolve problems, then you're slowing yourself down unnecessarily. You're hampering yourself. That's why you got to try GoToAssist Express, the leader in online remote support. It's designed for you with you the IT, by you I mean the IT professional or the person who does support. You know, we all do support for our family and friends, right? It's quick. It's usable, unlimited use, so you can support as many people as you want for one low, flat rate every month. It's the easiest way to control another computer and fix the problem. 8 computers at the same time, unattended support, I love this. You don't. It's not complicated for your end user. You send them a link. They click the link. There's one more button for them to press that says allow, so they download and install this, and you're done. And it's done. It's just awesome. GoToAssist.com. Go there right now, and you can try it free for 30 days. GoToAssist.com/Windows is the number to call. Not number to call. I say that because my phone is ringing. Paul, this always happens to you. I've never had a phone call in here. Ever.
Awesome. That's me calling.
Just to prove, I've never had it. It's never, I didn't even know this
Hello.
Thing. It's my Ring Central phone.
Yet.
Not yet. Where do I turn the, I'll figure that out. Nobody ever calls me. Now they will. Now that they know. Leo will be. I gave out, we were doing an ad for our phone system the other day, and I gave out the 800 number. I said, try our phone system. That was dumb.
Yep.
GoToAssist Express. I tell you what I'll give out here. GoToAssist.com/Windows so you can try it free for 30 days. You will love it. And yes, when the new stuff comes out, you'll get it automatically. So that's the best I can do. Don't ask me. I can't tell you. That's probably what it was. They were calling saying, don't tell anybody. It's a secret. Early next year. All right. So this was a big story all over the place. Office coming to iPad next year.
Yeah, this is actually Mary Jo's, but if I could quickly, this was my second.
Get over. Go ahead.
Exclusive today.
Oh, so it was Mary Jo that stole your exclusive.
I don't even know who originated this, but it was recast across the internet. You know, everyone wrote about it.
But it started with you.
I just want to remind people. Last week, I kind of ranted a little bit about how Microsoft needs to put Office on the iPad, like that there's no excuse for this not to happen. And then lo and behold, like a couple of days later, oh, look, they're doing it.
You did it.
In the wake of my podcast discussion about this topic, I did hear from someone at Microsoft who told me this as well, that it's coming. And so I thought this is cool. Because I talked about it on the podcast, I'll hold it on and I'll discuss it on the podcast. But then someone else.
Foolish,
about it.
Foolish man, you waited.
Yeah.
So Mary Jo, tell us a story.
Okay, so it's not my story, by the way. No. I didn't break Paul's exclusive.
Good.
it was the Daily who reported this, and so it's a basically unsourced report. I mean, they have sources, but they didn't specify anything about who these sources are. Are they Microsoft partners? Who's talking? So we don't really know. But they said Microsoft is definitely going to do Office for the iPad, and that it's going to be next year. They also said. Although this was pretty tenuous when they said this, they said, and of course the apps are going to be priced like Apple prices its apps on the iPad. So like $10 per app. That's the part of the report I am really skeptical
like,
about.
That seemed like speculation.
Yeah.
Well, but you are up against. Yeah, but you are up against Apple's $10 Office suite.
Yep.
I mean, it's not that it's more powerful and probably more desirable, but you are up against that.
Yeah, but I think Microsoft will come out with something probably in that range, but it won't be the full version of Word or the full version of Excel or PowerPoint. It'll be something probably more like what Office web apps are. I mean, they sell those apps for hundreds of dollars by themselves. So I even on the iPad, I don't see them suddenly going, okay, let's make this $10. And if you buy it on Windows, by the way, it's $100.
Yeah, $300. Yeah,
although an iPad version is not going to be anywhere near as capable as an Office on the desktop would be.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I think you can look at the iWork apps to get an idea of the types of things that are possible. And you know, or I think actually what Mary Jo said about the Office web apps is very apt, if you will, because you know, those are reduced functionality, but most of what most people need, you know, they actually work really well.
Bringing
that kind of, and they're free. So you could make this case that what you're getting in a native iPad app is Office web apps plus offline usage, right? Local storage. $10, you know, $20, whatever. I mean, that to me, that makes plenty of sense. So that's not what I was told. I wasn't told that. I'm just saying, you know, that makes sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, because everybody's just going, oh, yeah, so Microsoft's going to bring Office to the iPad. And so, you know, you have to think this through, right? Like, of course they would want to do this. But at the same time, they've got such a great advantage with Office being a mostly Windows platform only thing right now. I mean, that's why people would want a Windows tablet, right? They'd want it to have Office on it. So if you also put Office on the iPad, you're taking away that competitive advantage. You're actually helping sell more iPads, you could even argue.
I would imagine that a Metro version of Office apps would be equivalent to an iPad version, which could be, you know, fairly close to an Office web app. And that, you know, the advantage of getting full Office on full Windows is going to be all the additional, you know, the full functionality of the suite, you know, so that there'll still be that Windows advantage. But like I said last week or whatever that was, you know, it's crazy for them not to be doing this. It's crazy that this is not out yet. I don't understand what's taking so long.
They may want to wait for Windows 8 tablets, you know, and
that's
do it at the same time.
Yeah.
Okay. So then, right. Okay.
Yeah, you don't want to. Yeah, that's a good point, because you don't want people to buy iPads now when they could buy a Windows 8 tablet in a few months with Office on.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Keep that competitive edge.
Yeah.
Or actually, that non-competitive edge. The edge. Keep the try to get an edge.
They call it the going down with the ship strategy.
Hey, you know? In for a pound.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got a lot of work to do, though, right? I mean, because Office web apps, when you use them on a Mac, there's a lot of things that don't really work right. I mean, you can view documents. You can't always create documents or print documents. So that's still a lot of work for Microsoft to have to do, too. It's not like they can just take it and say, okay, now it's on the iPad. You know?
Well, what is if you think about it, what's the market for Office on an iPad? It's not, it's people who are using Office on a desktop. Because if you're not using Office on a desktop, there's not going to be any driving need to put Office on the iPad.
But you sort of recognize that in various workplaces, iPads are acceptable all of a sudden, okay?
Yeah.
And one of the things that would make them more acceptable, not that Microsoft wants to drive this, but is, you know, having Office available on them. You know, I know a lot of guys who, I know some guys who use iPads to read, for example. Aaron Hilgus, for example, from Big Nerd Ranch, told me that he uses an iPad now to do editing of his books.
Wow.
That he just, you know, in other words, you write on a computer, but then when you get the edits back from an editor, or you want to just read your own manuscript, you can go in the other room, sit down in a comfortable chair, grab a cup of coffee, whatever, and you kind of read it, and it's kind of nice for that kind of thing. And
I know perfect for that, actually.
A friend who works at Adobe, same thing, you know, uses it to read PDF documents. If you could use it to read Word documents easily, I know you can read Word documents in Pages or whatever the Apple app is, but, you know, natively, right, and have it have that most important of Office features, which is that kind of document fidelity thing. I mean, one of the nice things about Office web apps is even though they don't have all of the features, you're not going to view something in the Office web app version of Word make an edit, and then put it back on the PC and have all your formatting be blown away. It preserves everything. And that is incredibly important to people who use Office, because that's what they're really using, is the documents, you know. And that's something you don't get with OpenOffice, with iWork, with any of these, you know, Google Docs especially. Google Docs, you want to screw up your Office documents, put them in Google Docs and open them once. Yeah. You're screwed. They're all destroyed. Yeah.
It's called round tripping, and it's a
yes,
dead end.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And it's tripping, emphasis on the trip.
Tripping.
So, you know, that's going to be the major feature of this thing, is the preservation.
True WYSIWYG.
Yes, exactly. And the ability to view them as they really are, not blown out, you know, like right. some of these documents can look. So this is a big deal. I can't wait for this to happen. I just don't know why it hasn't. You know, again, I guess Mary Jo explained why, but I wish it was already available.
Keep wishing. It's not available, Paul.
Wish on, Therat. Wish on.
Yeah.
Good luck.
I'm a dreamer.
You're a dreamer. We all can dream about Xbox 360. I guess next year we're talking the 720 or whatever the Xbox 360 Part 2 sure. will be. But that doesn't mean people aren't still buying 360s. Probably Facts. Because of Modern Warfare 3 and Skyrim, I would guess. Skyrim's Mostly. Nice on an Xbox.
Yeah, yeah.
I know you don't like Sword and Sorcerers, but I happen to be addicted.
No, I don't have a problem with it. I just have a problem with the people that play those games. But the,
I'm just kidding. Thank you, Therat.
I know it's popular. With
it's okay. As a 50-level mage, I can destruct you with my fireball.
Yes, yes, exactly.
And you'll never feel a thing.
Yeah, we'll see how your flak jacket handles magic.
Your AK-47 has nothing on my firebolt.
By the way, if you want to see some awesome humor like that, Reno 911 has some incredible episodes where they bust up
really?
Like a Dungeons & Dragons game.
Oh,
and
how funny.
It is one of the funniest things I have ever seen in my life. And I believe there are at least a couple of episodes like that. Absolutely spectacular. But anyway.
Chat room saying that the reason big Black Friday for Xbox 360 and for Kinect. But they're saying, the chat room saying is because of the low prices. That was the real thing driving it.
So I will tell you this, and I have this kind of never-ending battle with my desire to have stuff. You know, I'm always trying to get rid of stuff, but it seems like stuff's always coming in.
And that's why you have to get rid of it, to make room.
Right. Part of the reason is you can go to places like Amazon and click once and get something
it's
immediately.
It's a little too easy to get stuff these days.
On Black Friday, they had a deal for a 4-gigabyte Xbox 360 with Kinect for $200.
Right.
Which is a smoking deal.
But does anybody want, why do you want the 4 gig? Wouldn't you want the bigger drive?
No, actually, I think for most people, 4 gigabytes is fine.
They
don't put
the games on there. They just store the saved games. That's
yeah, you can play games without having to load them on the hard drive. Yeah. I do that for the make it a little quieter, and it improves the load time performance.
That because I scratch discs, and if I
yes,
is there insurance
policy? I recommend
it
if you're gonna play a lot of games. But I think for the typical family where they're gonna throw it out in the living room and play a couple of Kinect titles,
4 gigs is okay.
4 gigs is fine, and plus, you know, you're not pigeonholed into that. You can always go buy the hard drive, you know, for $100.
Now, here's the question: Is $200 below cost?
No, I wouldn't surprise me in the slightest. Actually,
so really, selling 800,000 consoles below cost. What are you losing money, but you're making it up in volume? I guess they make it on the game.
It's the change bank strategy.
Yeah, they make it on games, right?
Well, yeah, this is the Razors and Razor Blade model. Isn't
okay.
It?
So that.
You know, it was interesting because I asked my followers on Twitter, you know, who went out and bought these Xboxes? Like, who bought all these Xboxes? And a lot of people came back and said, I'm buying my third Xbox, my fourth.
That's what I think. Fifth. That's exactly
what
I
think. I'm sorry. That's what I was alluding to earlier. I have three Xboxes in my house right now that work. I don't need one, but I was literally hovering over the buy me now button because that is such a smoking deal. I mean, I'm like, how could I not buy this?
You know, it's a good deal. I need three anyway.
That's the battle you have to fight.
I need one for the bathroom.
Like, what a stupid problem to have.
I have two at home
like,
and one here.
We're starving. Shut up. The Xbox is on sale.
It's cheap. You know, $200. We got to have, buy three. So they sold 800 consoles on Black Friday. 960,000 over the weekend, and 750,000 Kinects. That's amazing.
It is amazing because it doesn't work. But, you know, it's really the most wonderful scam of all time.
Wait a minute. Let me get this straight. Because I have a Kinect. I mean, I've used it. I played Dance Central. I like that. Yeah.
That's well, you understand. It can only understand the vaguest of gestures, right?
So if you're if you're doing the Kinect, river rafting and you jump, it works.
Listen, I'm sorry. Anyone who has used a Kinect has done this, which is you wave.
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah.
Then it finds you.
Yeah, right.
And then you start moving your hand around, and all of a sudden the little on-screen hand jerks to the bottom of the screen, and you sit there and you try to make it come back, and then you give up because it's dumb. It just doesn't work well. This is the way Kinect is. I'm sorry. You know, it's going to get better, apparently. You know, there's a new version coming out next year. When they talk about things like, you know, it's going to do facial recognition next year, you know, like, yeah, everything's going to get better in the future. I get it. But, you know, the current version is really vague. You know, I think they got it, but whatever.
Well, it's cheap. I think that's the reason. I mean, when you
sold millions of them.
Yeah, and you make them inexpensive, you're not going to make them, it's going to be hard to make them accurate.
I have no doubt. V2 is going to be fantastic.
Yeah.
They've also really been marketing the heck out of being able to use the voice part of Kinect to navigate your like video library and all that. You know, right. Say Bing, Batman, right. Blah, blah, blah. So I think people are also buying it for that, too. Not just because they can play games. But
do you really think people know about that?
Yeah, I do.
So I will say this. You are correct that works really well. That does work really well. It does. Yeah. I mean, the hand stuff doesn't work well. It works. I mean, barely. But the voice command stuff, that actually works really well. So, you know, mission accomplished. I don't know why. It's funny. Like, they call it like a motion sensor.
But you also need that for the TV thing, too, right? The Xbox TV service that's coming.
Right.
That they've also
marketed. You don't need it, but you can
control it.
It would make it a lot better, right?
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, I think anyone would agree that you could get very used to walking into a room and talking to your TV, you know, Xbox Kinect or Xbox Music, or you know, that's fairly natural. Thus, the natural computing language that we use to describe these things, it is very natural. This is not natural.
Well, this is the first I've heard about it. I thought I was. I love.
Imagine it. No. Imagine if our communication system was based around waving. Like you're talking, and I'm trying to get your attention. Leo.
You know, you're right, and that never worked very well. Yeah.
Over here. You know what that's like. It's like those little icons in the Mac OS X dock. Remember, they used to
bounce.
They don't do this anymore. They fixed it, but they used to bounce, and they would not stop bouncing until you addressed it.
So annoying.
That's what that right.
Yeah.
That's Kinect.
Yeah. So I mean, that's annoying.
Right?
So
that's what it was. It was terrible.
Yeah.
You can look at it and sort of see why they did it. And then you're happy they fixed it later. Because anyone who's used that thing was, oh, God. It would never stop.
Interesting. Kingy in the chat room is sending me an article from VentureBeat that says, Kinect, as well as it sold in the U.S., did not sell well in Japan. They only sold a total of 114,000. So maybe there's a cultural thing, too.
Yeah, there is. You know what it is?
What?
Those people don't have living rooms that are 10 feet deep.
That's right. You can't, because you need to get far from the Kinect.
You have to be at least 6 feet away from this thing for it to actually work. And if you're 6 feet away from the TV in Japan, you're in someone else's apartment.
Wow. Very good point.
Kind of like New York. Yeah. Kind of like my apartment. Yeah.
Right. Good luck using Kinect where you are right now.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You know, it's not possible.
Interesting. Yeah, SkyDrive. Let's go SkyDrive first. It's getting an overhead. We use SkyDrive for our shared document right now. It's got an overhaul, you say, but it looks the same to me right now. What's different? Tell me. Tell me what's new.
Well, I don't know that you're going to see what you're doing.
I'm on a Mac and Chrome, so maybe I won't see.
Right.
It.
So there's two things a little different here. One is you're viewing a document, not editing it.
Right.
And two, you're not. That's not really. You're in the. But now you're in the app.
That's because you won't let me.
Yes.
And in other news, the Macintosh is still the best. Oh, I'm sorry. No, I'm
already. Well,
you know I wouldn't do that.
Okay.
Microsoft decided to go out of business today, joining HP and Dell. No, I'm sorry. I would never do that, Paul.
Just teasing you.
They have made a number of improvements.
What have they done? What is new?
It's mostly related. Well, you know, for example, the if you ever did like a, I don't know who shares photos in SkyDrive yet, although I have great hopes that someday this will in fact be an excellent thing to do. But they have cleaned that stuff up, so it's a lot nicer looking. And now you can do things like easily go in and edit the caption of a photo, for example, which is kind of actually kind of a big deal. I mean, it's kind of a neat thing. But as far as like SkyDrive, the navigation stuff goes, you know, SkyDrive today primarily is, well, it's two things. It's a cloud service for storing files, right? And we know that they don't make it very easy to get the files into there, right? There's no Windows integration unless you go to a third-party app. But as far as the actual web-based interface itself goes, it's actually, it's pretty nice right now, I would say. I think that's in a good spot. So they've cleaned that up. You know, they've made it easier to do things like, you know, rename or move things, or, you know, it was hard before to have a file in the root of a folder and things like that. So they've done a nice job with that kind of stuff. And then the second half of what SkyDrive is it's a, basically a hosting environment for these apps, you know, for the Office web apps. And actually this is something Mary Jo added. I'm not actually too up on this, but I guess they've added some improvements to the Office web apps as well. Is that correct?
It is. Yeah, that was part of this too. Nothing huge. It was like little incremental updates to Office web apps. So like OneNote web app gets linked display, merge and autofill cells in Excel web app. So they're, you know, they're fleshing that out.
One might call it flushing, but really it's not. Yeah, all right.
There's a flushing sound, but what they're doing is...
They're fleshing out Office web apps. So, you know, the ultimate goal is to have everything or almost everything you have in Office on the web. But it's going to take a really long time. That's why you see all these little incremental updates like this.
I keep waiting for this day. If you use the Office web apps to view a Word document, it's really nice. If you use the Office web apps to edit that document, it blows it out so that the text fills the entire width of the browser window. It doesn't retain the, I don't know if aspect ratio is the right term, but, you know, the width of the document. It just, it puts it into, you know, if you use the word application, I'm in what is this, it used to be called page view, print layout, okay? The layout that they use, I'm trying to find the, is basically, actually it's called web layout. And what it does is it just wraps every line of text so that it occupies the entire width of the window. It doesn't retain the document dimensions. And so, you know, if you're familiar with, you know, if you read a book or a newspaper article, you know that, you know, you want a column of text to be pretty thin. It makes it easy to read. Likewise, when you're writing, you know, you don't want to write all the way across the screen and come back around and, you know, writing. You know, it would be like typing on a piece of paper that was like sideways. So it was 11 inches by 8.5. And so the other way around, it's just, it's too wide, you know. And so every time they update Office web apps, I look to see if they fix that. And they still have not fixed that. A little irritating, but, you know, I think that's one of those things. As this thing matures, like she says, you know, they're going to add more features and fix things over time. And someday we're gonna arrive at this wonderful day. I can't wait. Where I don't even have to install Office anymore. I can just use the web apps.
Yeah, is that what Microsoft wants to do? I mean, it's kind of hard for it to do because Office is such a cash cow.
Yeah,
that's a problem.
That's probably
for
not
Microsoft.
What they want. Yeah, it is. It is absolutely a problem. Yeah. What if I could, well, you know, I would pay, you know, a yearly subscription fee for a very nice version of this, you know, like the pro version or whatever. I'd be happy to do that. Yeah. I would.
Same here. I don't care if I have Office on my PC as long as I could use what's in Office.
Well, that's actually a model that Microsoft probably has always wanted. They've always wanted the subscription model for the desktop software. Just put it on the web. You know, what's the difference really?
A lot of money.
Can't you charge enough money, like $20 a month, to make it pay off?
Yeah, I think the difference is money. Yeah,
people won't pay that. What's the most you could charge for an Office suite monthly?
Monthly?
20? 15?
No, it's way too much.
It's too much.
You know, this would have to be part of, like, for example, Office 365. The cheapest version of Office 365 is $6 a month.
Yeah.
Right? It can't. So you can't.
Bucks. And even then, is it getting uptake? Even at that price?
Yeah, actually, they just announced 5 million licenses sold.
Wow! I think. So that's got to kill them because that's probably 5 million, well, maybe not 5 million, but some million number of people who aren't buying the Office suite.
Well, except the $4 version of Office 365 isn't really Office, right? SharePoint, right? Oh, okay. It's not Word, Excel, PowerPoint.
And so you want the desktop Office to use it. You need it.
I bet a lot of these people have on the desktop as well.
So that's even better then it's all upsell.
Yep.
Yeah.
For Microsoft, it's all upsell.
Yeah. Right. If you imagine a typical small business, startup, whatever, I mean, you could imagine a lot of those people are going to want to have some version of Office on their
desktop. Yeah, you need it. You need a desktop.
Yep.
Of course you do. Every idiot.
I would think so.
Let's take a break. We're talking to Mary Jo Foley, all things Microsoft.com. Paul Thurrott, the supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. We've got more Windows phone news. I got my Samsung Focus S.
That's a good one.
I like it. I was kind of hoping for the Titan because it's massive.
Yeah. But you know what? That's a big phone. That's the one I'm using right now every day.
Yeah, well, I was using the Focus, so this was a logical successor.
Yeah,
to
bigger
the Focus.
Screen, yep. Much better camera.
Yep.
That's
a little green. The camera's a little green. I find a little green cast on it compared to the iPhone. The iPhone's such a good camera. It's kind of tough to compete. I think it competes well with. In fact, I think it's the same camera as in the Galaxy.
That one's pretty close. The HTC Titan, I think, was the only one on the Windows Phone side that was as good as the.
I love the live tiles in Mango. I think that's great. As you can see, I've missed 22 phone calls. Just love and 40 messages. Just love knowing that.
Actually, you know what the worst part of that is when you flip back to the home screen and you have new messages, they flip so that the numbers, like if you're someone like me who gets a lot of email, it will say like, it's like 2, 7, 17, 24. You're like, stop. And it's like, 38. No, that's enough. every morning it's like that with the phone. You're like, it's awful seeing them wind up like a roulette.
I bought a weather app I don't know what the best weather app is for the live tile, but I bought a Weather Live, which seems fine.
That's nice. Yeah. Metro-E?
It's Metro-E.
I use the AccuWeather.
AccuWeather? All right, I'll have to try that. I have always loved the pictures, the way it kind of does the pan and zoom on that. I think it's nice. It's good. Yeah. Very simple, easy to use. I've not had any trouble with it. I it's great. It's a good phone. And it is very snappy. So, yeah, so that's the one you're using, huh?
Yep.
Well, we'll talk more about Windows Phone and Mango in just a bit. Right now, though, I'd like to talk about my friends at Epson. I'm willing to bet that you and Mary Jo have used an Epson printer or two in your time.
I just used one yesterday.
Oh, yeah. Maybe one.
How can you not use an Epson printer? I'm thinking back. My first tractor feed was the MX-80. Remember that? What a great printer that was.
I do. I remember that.
Yeah. Classic.
Yep.
Oh, I've just killed my lower thirds. What happened? I want to show an Epson lower third. Where'd it go? There it is. So Epson came to us and said, hey, Leo, would you be interested in, do you like Epson? I said, what do I like Epson? Just walk around the office. I have, Sarah's got an Epson Artisan printer on her desktop. I have an Artisan at home. We've got an Epson laser for our big office all-in-one. We've got an Epson projector in the office. I've got an Epson, the cinema projector at home for watching movies. What else? Oh, the Perfection scanner. I'm an Epson guy. And for photo printing, I have the Y-carat Epson. I said, well, okay, that's enough. Stop. What we want to talk about is the Epson Workforce Pro. And I said, well, I don't have it. And they said, well, no, because it just came out. Can we send you one? So they sent me an Epson Workforce Pro for the office. And then I bought one for my house because I like it so much. It's an all-in-one that solves a lot of problems people have with inkjet printers. Yes, it's an inkjet for the office. And I know some of you are saying, oh, the consumables on inkjets are too high. I don't want to do it. No, let me tell you, this is economical. This is does things that only an inkjet could do. We've actually replaced our laser printer with the inkjet printer because it's so economical. 50% less per page versus a color laser. Beautiful, brilliant color for those business presentations and graphics and so forth and so on. And it's super fast. And one of the things I really like, it does double-sided printing.
So you'll save on paper, too, when you double-sided print with the Epson Workforce Pro, the 4530 all-in-one. It does scan, it does fax, it does copying, two-sided color printing faster than anybody else. In fact, you'll get two-sided prints faster than your laser printer can give you a single-sided print. And with the extra capacity ink cartridges and paper holder, 500 sheet paper capacity, 580 sheets. That's more than a ream. So I never have to, I don't change paper nearly as often. And the ink cartridges, they're big. I mean, I have to pull one out so I can show you. They're huge, and that means you don't change them as often, and they're more economical. This is a great printer. Also, if you have iOS, it prints directly from an iPhone or an iPad. You just select the print command, and it sees it. Because it's on the Wi-Fi network, it's got Ethernet, it's got USB. This does everything you could want. I just love this printer. I want you to take a look. In fact, they're suggesting you get it for your business for the holidays. Put it in the stocking at your work. If you're the boss, you'll love this. The Epson Workforce Pro. The one we're using is a WP4530. But if you go to Epson.com, you'll see a whole bunch of great printers. This is just a fantastic. Actually, the 4540 is the one I have. I'm looking at the wrong one. The 4540. Epson Workforce Pro. The whole line is fantastic. Check it out today at Epson.com. I hope we can do it. I mean, I could do ads for every Epson product there is. I even had, remember when the Radio Shack Model 100 was big? Epson made a Model 100 that had a built-in printer. I can't remember the model number, but I had that one. Remember it was Epson Seiko, right? Seiko Epson. Yep. Yes, the MX-80.
MX-80 sounds like a weapon.
Yeah, it did sound like that.
We've come a long way, thank God. Moving along here to our next item, let's talk a little bit about Windows Phone.
Finally,
the Dell Venue Pro is getting Mango. What is the? I don't even remember the Venue.
Wow.
Are people excited about this?
No.
It's actually a pretty cool phone.
Is it seven inches? I like it. Is it huge? Like the street?
No. It's kind of like a BlackBerry type phone.
Oh, interesting. So it has a keyboard.
Yeah, one of the rare Windows
phones. What carrier was selling that one?
AT&T, I believe.
Yeah. I think Dell would sell it directly, I think, too.
Cool. So they're getting Mango.
Yeah, it's good because Dell's been kind of noncommittal. When everybody's been asking him, you know, what are you going to do for Mango? You're going to have Mango phones. You're going to have next generation phones after Mango. Dell's being pretty noncommittal. So I think people are kind of worried, like, are we even going to get the Mango update? I mean, they were, but it's just taken them an extra long time to get it. So good. It's out.
And Lenovo, of all people, is going to start doing Windows phones.
Yeah, this makes sense. I mean, suddenly Lenovo is one of the world's biggest PC makers, right? So obviously they're big Microsoft partners. And they sell a LePhone, if you will, that it looks and works and is, you know, very much like a Windows phone in the same way that, you know, a Galaxy S2 is a lot like the phone that you have now, the Windows phone. So you can kind of see the underpinnings are all there. Why not, you know? It's a little hard to decipher the Chinese page on which this was described, but apparently based on the Google Auto Translate, sometime late in 2012, they're going to come out with their first Windows phone.
Yeah, the translation was a little confusing. It was like, we're thinking about doing a Windows phone, and we already have the schedule. It's next year in the second half.
Exactly. So, you're like, all right, so which part of this?
Are you or aren't you?
We're thinking hard.
Yeah.
In fact, we've thought so hard we have a launch day. Speaking of launch days.
If you let him talk long enough, he'd just show it to you, and then they would be selling it.
Speaking of launch days, we're now seeing from the Boy Genius Report, which has in the past been really good on iPhones. Mm-hmm. They're reporting that the Lumia 900 will be in the U.S. early 2012. 4.3-inch clear black AMOLED display with a 1.4 gigahertz processor, 8-megapixel camera. Same form factor as the 800 that they've got in Europe right now. This is according to Board Genius.
But a big screen, unlike the European 3.7 inch screen, we're going to see something that's more standard. You know, I had this debate on MacBreak Weekly this week. I just feel like Apple, by sticking with a 3.5 inch screen, is really starting to get left behind. I think people want the bigger screens that we're starting to see now, the four inch and up.
Yeah, right? I do too. It's hard. You know, the iPhone is beautiful, but when you go to one of these bigger screens, it's like, oh, you know, it's
easier on the eyes.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's one of the things I liked about the HTC Titan, frankly. Even though it's a big phone, it's very thin, which kind of undercuts the bigness in some ways. But then you see the fonts on that thing. They're so big and beautiful.
Yeah.
It's something nice about it.
Yeah, it's big, though. I mean, I tried to hold that Titan.
What's the screen size on the Titan?
4.7, I think,
ooh,
isn't it?
Or,
okay. So it's interesting.
But Mary Jo is normally size.
Right,
so
unlike you.
It is... It is understandable that you would have a hard time holding this phone.
Lives in the land of the giants.
Yeah. So I was like, I looked at that. I was like, yeah, baby.
You know, that's a big phone or a big man.
Yeah.
The Paul Bunyan phone.
Yeah.
I like the bigger screen size just because it's easier to see, easier to browse the web,
exactly.
Right? But then you're like, okay, I have to hold it with two hands, right?
And right, like an iPad.
Well, there is some point. Now, this is the Galaxy S2 from Sprint, which is, I think, 4.6 mm-hmm. inches. That's just about right for me. And I have a 4.3 inch. But 3.5, even though it's higher resolution, the iPhone 3.5 is starting to look...
I would be happy to give up, like, dots per inch. Like, have the same resolution with a bigger screen. It would make a tremendous difference on the iPhone.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, typing is easier on the big screen.
I agree.
You know,
everything's
on the
bigger.
Virtual keyboards.
Yeah.
It's just a big deal. You know, obviously.
Well, I ordered I ordered the new Google Nexus, the Samsung Nexus, which is big.
No, how did you order it? Did you order an unlocked one?
Unlocked from Great Britain. I'm waiting for it. But the thing I find intriguing is it is a big screen with high resolution. It's 1280 by 720.
Not quite
Retina, but close. Now you're cooking, right? Maybe. Yep. I don't know. We'll see.
I think so. Yeah. I'm going to get one of those.
I hope there is the new Lumia. I want the new Lumia. I want it on Verizon, please.
I think you're going to be in good shape.
There is somebody in the chat room, obviously a European who has a Lumia 800, says he loves it. It's a great phone. I think it's pretty exciting. Now this explains a little bit about why they didn't release it in the U.S. They were waiting a little bit longer to get a bigger screen, more something that probably in Europe.
You know, it's so American. We need the big
American.
SUV.
We want the SUV phone, exactly.
Yeah, the VW Polo is not going to make it in the U.S. We need to have a Roatan or whatever those things are called. Those
exactly.
Ginormous.
The Touareg.
Yeah, Touareg.
Touareg. Terrible name. I don't know who.
It's the same thing, isn't it? I mean, it's like, you know, we can't.
No.
You know, we can't stand to have a little phone. We have to have, like, you know, it's like that. You know, you want to pull it out of your pocket and have to do that exaggerate. Hold on, let me check my phone.
You know. Well, you saw that Samsung
there
ad
it is.
Mocking the iPhone fanboys all in line waiting for their new iPhone and looking over the fence at people, real people who had big phones going, "Ooh, gosh, that's big. Ooh, that's pretty." But you know, the problem is, and I know why, the streets are very narrow in Europe. You can't get one of these big phones down those streets.
It'd be like hitting someone with an umbrella when you're walking down the street.
They just won't do it.
Sorry, I was checking my email. Hit someone in the eye.
You Americans and your big phones, get out of our country.
So Microsoft Security Essentials. First of all, let me ask you a question, because somebody in the chat, on the radio show, we were talking about antivirus. It was my memory that Windows 8 will have an antivirus built in, right?
Yes.
So, I know who I was talking to. I was talking to one of our sponsors, ESET. They make a standalone antivirus. And I said, you know, this must be challenging. First of all, now there's Microsoft Security Essentials. At least you can make the argument, well, MSE is free, but it isn't as complete or as fast as the third-party AV. But once it's built in and it's just part of Windows 8.
Yeah. Well, I would say that the people who sell security suites are selling other things, right?
Exactly. That's what they said. We're selling much more now.
It's platform of, you know, we have you know, kid protection for kids. We have, you know, website tracking. We have, you know, this and this.
Is, in your opinion, MSE as good as a standalone antivirus?
Yeah.
There's no reason to get to buy an antivirus unless you
My kids use this. My wife uses it. I use it on all my computers. I look at my kids' computers from time to time to make sure there's no silly extra browser toolbars and stuff going on. And, you know, we've had issues here and there, but no more than, you know, by and large, it's been fantastic. And I've never had anything. So, yeah, I think Microsoft Security Essentials combined with a healthy amount of common sense is all you need. Personally.
So MSC on Windows 8 is going to be inside Defender or Defender plus MSC? Do we know?
It's inside Defender. So Defender is, they're adding anti-malware definition, I'm sorry, antivirus definition and scanning and all that stuff to that same engine, which is, you know, basically what, it's what MSC is today when you think about it. You install MSC and it disables Defender. So now it's kind of going the reverse. They're just renaming it. It's basically MSC just built in. Defender's a great name, though. I think that's a good name for it.
Right. I'm a defender. Defender of so, the but realm.
But so what's the deal with this beta, though? I don't actually, this is something I don't know anything about.
Well, yeah. Mary Jo, do you?
I do. Yep. So Microsoft, about a week or so ago, was signing up testers for the new beta. And they actually gave those testers who signed up the bits this week. So on the list of features, it's kind of a minor update, I believe. It's going to just make things faster. So general performance improvements, a simpler UI, supposedly. And then they say, this is a little curious. Maybe you'd know more about this, Paul, but they said a new and improved protection engine. So I don't know if that means they're actually changing out the engine that's in MSC or if it's just, you know, new and improved, meaning just we're adding some more definitions to it or whatever.
I think it's just new and improved. So I'm not up on the release schedule of these various products, but that engine is the same one that they use in the Forefront products. And it's also the same one they use in an online scanner that they have. And so I'm guessing that that thing just is something that gets revved over time and maybe now they're building
the but it's not the same one as an MSE?
No, it is the same.
MSC, MSC has the same engine in it as the product called Forefront, Microsoft Forefront Endpoint Security.
I got
They have the exact same engine.
So it's the one. It's they acquired Giant Antivirus. It's the same, and then upgraded, improved it. But that's always that's the engine going forward.
Well, actually,
because I got you know, I couldn't figure it out. I said, well, why do they? I downloaded the new MSC, and I didn't see any. I didn't understand what was going on. So it's,
Giant didn't do antivirus. They did anti-spy.
Okay.
It's what Microsoft calls anti-malware. So the capabilities that are in Defender in Windows 7 today is the direct descendant of that Giant software. It's anti-malware, if you will,
right.
Spyware.
Right.
Antivirus is a different thing. And the Forefront server products have different capabilities. You know, and some of the products allow you to plug in different antivirus engines, and you can use weird combinations of them, some of which are known to be good combinations for certain uses. So, for example, if you're trying to prevent, the passage of bad software over Exchange or something, you know, they'll be like, okay, well, these two seem to work well together and give you the highest, you know, rate of success or whatever. So you can do different things like that. But as far as the client goes, yeah, it's Microsoft's. I believe it's homegrown. I'm not sure if that came from an acquisition or where it's from, but it's there. It's Microsoft's now, whatever it is, antivirus as well as anti what they call malware.
Okay. But it was all under the hood because I did the download and it all looked the same to me. I didn't see anything different.
Yeah, when they went from version 1 to 2, they changed the UI around a little bit. And I haven't looked at it. So have you looked at the new one?
I guess it looks a little different. Yeah.
I haven't looked at it.
It doesn't. You know what? I wasn't.
It almost doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, you never see it. If life is good, you never even know it's there. You know, it's off of the background running. So.
We talk about this. You were on TNT last week. I know Mary Jo was on yesterday, our Tech News Today show. And they covered tech news every single day. So they get to say new Yahoo takeover rumors almost daily.
Yeah, the Yahoo takeover rumor of the day. I just find this thing to be very interesting and very convoluted. You know, for example, Yahoo owns Alibaba.
Which is Google. It's not Google, but it's the Chinese search engine. Okay.
Alibaba is teaming with a group of other companies to try to buy Yahoo. All right. And now you have Microsoft, who is teaming with a group of other companies, one of which is run by Mark Andreessen, formerly of Netscape, trying to buy, not Yahoo, but a part of Yahoo.
A stake.
A minority stake in Yahoo. And that their plan is to, well, find a CEO. I don't think they have a CEO, like a permanent CEO, and replace three of the board members, one of whom would be replaced by Marc Andreessen, Microsoft's former enemy. And I think I mentioned this on the podcast last week, but I guess you weren't around. But my theory about this stuff is that Microsoft's overreaching aim is to just ensure that their search partnership with Yahoo continues. It has to be that. Because
right.
Yahoo represents the 10% biggest
10% or something. It's a huge amount of their search.
Oh, no, no. I mean, of Microsoft's search percentage is more like 75%.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's total search market share, right? It's,
right.
Yahoo is the biggest part of that.
Okay.
So the only thing I can think of, aside from the silliness of all these like kind of weird groups of companies and their various aims and goals, you know, some people want to buy it outright. Some people want to buy just, you know, part of it. Yahoo isn't sure. You know, they had a meeting this week of their board of directors. They're not sure if they want to sell the whole thing now or if just part
God,
of it.
God, I don't, you know.
I know, it's a big drama, but, you know, I think from our perspective, the story here to me is that Microsoft's interest in a company that is now valued at less than half what it was when Microsoft made their original bid 4 years ago is to protect that Bing search partnership. I have to think
that makes sense. That makes sense.
And they've even said that, you know, so you see so many reports going, Microsoft's changed its mind. It wants to buy Yahoo. No, they don't.
Yep.
They do not. they even said recently during a call, like, no, we're really happy we didn't buy them, you know, and all they're trying to do is make sure whoever buys them, whatever group it is, doesn't unravel this partnership they have because they need Yahoo for the search partnership.
It would be.
I mean, they're
right.
Totally dead. Yeah.
Microsoft is focused on some really core things right now, right? The next version of Windows, Office 365 and the next version of Office. Office on the iPad, perhaps. To distract Microsoft right now with the purchase of Yahoo would be ludicrous, would be the worst possible. This would set the company back for years and would never turn into anything valuable for them at all. There's
well,
nothing
that's
there.
Even the larger story. It's pointless. Yeah.
Absolutely pointless. That's what I mean. But it would do such irreparable harm to them at such an important time. But to protect their search business with Bing, this thing that they've worked so hard and spent so much money on, and really, you know, they try to, you know, make the lemonade with it. But I mean, you know,
$700 million last quarter or whatever it was.
Very much a minority.
So by buying a minority stake, getting a seat, a couple of seats on the board, that's how they protect themselves.
Yeah.
And that's sufficient.
Yes. The goal is status quo. We want this company to continue. And we want them to continue using our Bing engine on the background because, you know, Yahoo doesn't have their own search technology, you know, the core engine stuff.
It's all gone. Yeah.
One of the, I mean, you'd have to think Google could swing in and say, we'll give you a way better deal on this. And, oh, by the way, you already know we do a better job of search. So why wouldn't you want us? You know, and that new owners might be inclined to do that.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
right.
But if you have a minority stake, you don't have a controlling stake.
Well, it's actually, depending on how you work it, you know, they could have, you remember that they're replacing three of the board members. So what you do have is some influence from that kind of standpoint. So,
yeah, so it would be a defensive move against Google or Alibaba. Alibaba could be a threat.
Absolutely. What if they license technology from?
I don't know if
they're
anybody
probably not
in
big
the
friends of. Anyway, yeah, okay, forget it. Yeah.
I don't know if anybody in the U.S.
Right, I'm talking crazy talk, but you know, I'm just.
Oh, I use Yahoo all the time. I love that Alibaba.
It's protection against the unknown future. In other words, Yahoo is clearly like the sinking ship. I mean, they're careening without any sense of direction. So you want to, you don't want to continue that, but I mean, you want to make sure that when it lands and when it stops spinning. They're still paying you money and still using your service. You don't want it to change, however it might change.
Do we know what any of these numbers are? Like how much money, how much revenue there is to Microsoft from this? How much the minority stake that they're contemplating would be?
So actually, I'm terrible with numbers and don't have access to this off the top of my head. But, you know, one of the things I do know is that the Microsoft deal with Yahoo has some built-in parameters related to ad revenue and how things are going. And apparently, Bing has actually underperformed for them. It has actually done pretty bad.
Hmm.
And this is something both Yahoo and Microsoft have talked about publicly over the past 12 months. So Microsoft, you know, has pledged to, you know, improve the situation or whatever. But I suspect there is some unrest. And I'm sure from Yahoo's perspective, they're thinking, look, our value has gone downhill dramatically. And this thing that you promised was going to be great hasn't been as good as you said it would be. And that may be, you know, that's part of the concern. Like, they've already complained a little bit about, you know, the performance.
Yeah, Microsoft actually had to make extra payments to Yahoo to make up for the difference. And put agreements in place to assure them that they were going to continue to support them and all, because I guess there were some issues around the advertising platform alignment, as I kind of remember it. So, yeah, I mean, they don't want any more problems with this partnership. It took them a while to hammer it out, and they're really involved in it now and dependent on it basically for, continuing Bing's growth. So even if it's just a minority stake.
We can't lose money as fast as we're losing it if we don't have Yahoo in the mix.
Right. Well, yeah, the one thing that you could do is lose it a lot faster. So you do want to avoid that. And I think that's what they're trying to do.
Boy, it doesn't sound good. Whatever's going on, it doesn't sound good for anyone. Finally... Go ahead.
They used to be the darlings of the internet era, remember?
I still love Flickr and Delicious.
Yahoo cameos were in movies.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, what the heck happened here? I don't know.
You know, we actually had a very sad moment in San Francisco a few weeks back. There's a very famous Yahoo sign. A big neon sign on the highway.
Yep.
Just out of San Francisco.
Kind of old-fashioned looking.
This represents Yahoo. There it is. And it was. Well, it looks like Las Vegas. It says vacancy, Yahoo, a nice place to stay on the internet.
You need to find a picture like that of during the day, though. Because what you're not getting there is that it really has the feel of a 1950s Chevrolet dealership sign. It's got this it's like pink and purple, and it really has a
Yahoo colors.
Kind of an old-fashioned vibe to it.
Yeah, and it really was a landmark.
So
they
you're
just
saying
took
was.
It down.
Oh, okay.
And I think the last person turn out the lights.
Someone should have declared it a National Historic Landmark or something, like the Citgo sign in Fenway Park.
It's like the Citgo sign. Does Citgo still exist? Yeah. As a city service?
As a separate entity?
As a gas
probably
station?
Not. No, I don't believe so.
There's the purplish
Yahoo.
That's during the day. It was a cool sign. And they'd had it there for, I'm sure, 10 years. It was there forever. But it is no longer a nice place to stay on the internet. And so they're going to close that. They closed down the Yahoo Motel.
Changed that slogan with whatever it was that Carol Bartz wrote to employees before she left.
Carol took it with her. That was like her severance.
Yeah.
Here, you get the sign.
It's in our front lawn now.
So I can't remember. I think I read on you. It's you and me, Paul, are the only guys who like the Kindle Fire. Everybody else is slamming it. We had Kevin Rose on Twitter. He said, I hate it. I think this is, for $200, this is a great little tablet, and I recommend it to people, and I think you agree.
Yeah, I the weird thing about it is it's not for me.
No.
I hate to say power user, but as someone who's, I guess, very particular needs, I have wanted a tablet of that exact size and shape for a long, long time. But what I want on there is a lot of storage, and I want to put local content
on it. Very little storage. It's not for local content.
Yeah, it's not for that at all. And honestly, I recognize that what I'm asking for is kind of a niche usage scenario that most people don't want that. I can tell you that, you know, for normal people, you know, the Fire is fantastic. And it's not just fantastic because it's $200. It's not like, oh, it's good for the price. Like, that, it's just good. It's well made.
And
it's nice.
You and I, all of the geeks.
Yeah.
Andy Inatko, Kevin Rose.
I think people can't see beyond their own little.
It must be, because I'm blown away by this. And
yeah,
I think
I
for
too.
A lot of people, this is a great gift.
Yep.
And Amazon has sold, or is planning to sell, millions of them. They never give you numbers, but the rumor is they've made 5 million. I know they don't have to for some reason.
Well, they did say millions, but they were combining that with Kindle devices as well. So,
they've already sold
millions of the new device.
They'll sell millions of the $79 Kindle too. That one's great too.
Yep,
I'm a Kindle fan. Anyway, I have a Fire. I don't, you know, I use it from time to time. But if you have an iPad or...
Well, I can tell you, and this, by the way, this is a true story. My wife is not into technology, but she looks at that thing and she says, I want a Windows 8 tablet that looks just like this.
Oh, interesting.
That's the exact size she wants.
Yeah, I like 7 inches. I think Apple is very wrong, or Steve Jobs was very wrong when he said nobody wants a 7-inch tablet. It's half the resolution, half the size.
Well, in his defense, he also said no one wants to read anymore, yeah. And then they did iBooks. Yeah. So
it may have been disinformation on his part.
It could be in the pipeline.
Yeah. I think it's
hope
not.
So, because honestly, for me, a 7-inch iPad would be perfect.
It's just the right size. There's something about 7. When I got the 7-inch Android, the Samsung Galaxy Tab, I loved that.
Yeah.
But I didn't like the operating system so much. But I think the problem Apple's facing, frankly, is they are desperately trying to avoid the fragmentation that Android has of 18 different screen sizes, which kills developers.
Except that there's no reason why they can't have a 7-inch version of the iPad that has a 1024 by 768.
Same resolution. Exactly. Then you solve it.
Perfect.
Yeah, that's the way to do it. You're right. All right, we're going to get our tip of the week, our software pick of the week, our enterprise pick of the week. And Mary Jo, do you have a code name as well?
Of course.
Of course she does. She's the queen of code names. But before we do that, let's talk a little bit about Audible.com, my favorite place for getting audiobooks. It is really my bookstore. Whenever a new book comes out, I always go to Audible.com first and say, hey, let's see if it's available in audio. And often it is. I'm reading right now Neal Stephenson's Ring D. Very nice job, actually, on the reading of, I think, thrillers. And
Do you like that book, by
no.
the way?
No. I mean, yeah. I don't hate it. It's just,
I feel like this guy, he wrote Snow Crash, which is one of the best books ever read.
So many brilliant.
Cryptonomicon,
yes.
Unbelievably
yes.
good. Yes. And then he wrote this trilogy of books that, like, it takes up 3 feet of width on my bookshelf, and I could never get through any of it. And ever since then, seems like everything he's written has been very dense.
I liked Anathem a lot. I thought that was good. This reminds me of a kind of a cheesy thriller. It's like he almost, I believe what happened is Neal Stephenson
He tried to go back to Snow Crash. I think
he's trying to cash in. I think he wants Alex Cross money. I think he wants the Bourne Identity. I think he's saying,
He's been riding the popularity of those first two books for a long time. And I think a lot of people have been saying, I want a book like that.
Maybe.
And I just don't think he writes like that anymore.
It's not a well-written book, and it's okay. I mean, it's a good thriller. I would recommend it. The only issue I have is that it's Neal Stephenson, and I expect more from Neal. That's all. Anyway,
right.
That's neither here nor there. That's just our review. Right.
Well, speaking of people that don't know how to end a book, my
another good one.
My pick this week is from Stephen King, who's had kind of a spotty career.
Oh, have you listened to his new one? You're talking about the new one?
Yeah, actually, so I've not finished it yet, so I don't actually know that he screwed up the ending, but he's
the
he's
best
done that
way
a lot
to read
lately.
A Stephen King novel, not to finish it.
Because don't finish it. Read it right up to the last chapter.
Right.
No, this one is fascinating and actually pretty well done. And the amazing thing about this to me is I'm starting to see something in the mainstream press where people are starting to appreciate Stephen King for
finally.
What he is, which I think is one of our greatest writers of our time. And he's finally getting out of that kind of horror writer pigeonhole thing. So this one is, of course, now it's like a time travel story, but it's basically about a town in Maine, which, of course, has some portal that allows you to go back in time. And so this guy decides to try to find out whether, I almost said John Wilkes Booth, whether Oswald killed the president, President Kennedy. And if so, then he will try to prevent it. And a lot of it is about the type of investigation that, you know, people could do on their own right now, just using all of the evidence we have. But he actually goes back and is able to do it. In that day and age. And I think the fascinating thing about this book actually is the way it's almost like Mad Men, where I wasn't alive at that time, but I watched this and I think this is exactly what that was like. And Stephen King does a great job of portraying the world of the early 1960s. And it's really, really well done.
I'm buying it right now. So
yeah, it's a good one.
Here's how you get it for free, kids. Go to audible.com/windows. And that's right where you go there. You sign up for the gold account. That's a book a month. But your first month's free. Your first book's free. You can cancel it any time, so you don't have to pay a penny. And it's yours to keep forever. That's a $45 value free from Amazon.com. Now, I have a subscription. So, you see, this is the process of buying it. I have a credit, so I'm going to use my credit. This is what you'll be doing if you're watching the video. I'm buying this book because that's how much I like this book. I could tell already when you described it, time portal, Kennedy. I'm there, kids. I love it. I can't wait.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm gonna complete
and of course,
the purchase.
Obviously, the anniversary of the Kennedy assassination.
Right,
just
it was
by,
timely. So. Yeah, and I'm with you. I think Stephen King, who gets you know, because he's a genre writer, often I think gets underestimated.
Always does. And actually, I would say, you know, if you look at books like The Stand or even It, you know, this is a guy who can write characters really, really well and somehow keep these crazy intervening backstories, you know, going.
And it's brilliant guy.
Yeah, I really do think he's undervalued.
And, but even his prose, if you just read his prose, is beautifully written. And so that's the thing. I mean, this guy's a great writer. I cannot wait. So now that I bought it, and you saw how easy it was, took you seconds, it's in my library. I can listen to it now. I can download it. I can put it on an iPod, an iPhone, a Zune, a Windows. Oh, can't play on a Windows phone. Maybe. Sorry about that. Don't forget to mention that. I mean, this is
coming soon.
You can listen to it on your computer. It's just great. Audible.com/Windows. Now
you can listen to it on your Kindle.
You can, if not the cheapest one, but on the Fire. Where, in fact, they have the Audible app on the Kindle Fire, as they do on the iPhone and Android phone. That makes it very easy. Your whole library is available at any time. Now, I got to say, that's our pick for this week. But there, and we pick a new book whenever we have an ad for Audible because, you know, it's fun. But you have your choice. There are 100,000 books here, most of which are one credit, except for the very longest books. That means you can pick one up right now. This is, by the way, the number two download today, right after Michael Connelly's The Drop. I don't know that. A Harry Bosch book, 17. And right before Steve Jobs by Walter Isaacson. You can see Grisham, Ivanovich, a lot of the people love the mysteries and the thrillers and all of this.
Yeah, I'm sure the new Alex Cross book is in there somewhere.
Oh, you bet. You bet. Awesome.
That's interesting.
Audible.com/windows. Get it for free. Or any of these, almost any of these books that you see here, 100,000 titles on audible.com/windows. Somebody in the chat room says, when are you narrating a book? Bidjinj asks. I'd love to do it. I just don't have the time because it's a fairly long process to do it.
Some of these things are 22 hours long. Yeah. You know?
This one you just recommended is over 30. I would love to do it. But I think it's not in the cards, at least until I retire.
I don't think I could make it through a book. I would lose my voice.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, let us continue on. We are in the end game of the show, which means we get our tip, software pick, enterprise pick, and code name of the week. Let's start with a tip of the week from Paul Thurrott.
This one's just fun. I mean, it's not the full Windows Phone experience, but it's pretty good. It's a web-based emulator of Windows Phone where the phone has been populated with fake user data, so you can really kind of experience it. And you run it in the web browser of your iPhone or Android, and it's actually pretty cool. It works pretty well. You know what I haven't tried actually is whether this would work in the web browser of Windows Phone, and then whether from the web browser in the emulator I could load it again.
No, that's crossing the stream. The world would end.
Exactly, it's like time travel. Anyway, what it does is it gives you a nice look at, you know, the tile-based UI and the various apps. It's not the full thing. You know, it doesn't do voice control and all that stuff, but it's pretty good. And if you go into the email app, there's email in there. You can look at that, see what the fonts look like and all that.
It's wild.
It's actually pretty good.
Now, do I do it by surfing to a website or do I download some?
Yeah, you don't download anything. You just go to the website. It has a
aka.ms. I guess that's the Microsoft shortening. / WP demo, aka. Let me just type this in. Freak somebody out. .ms, Microsoft.
Yep. WP demo.
/WPDEMO.
I'm curious to see if. So when you do this, if you do it on a Windows Phone, it says, we've noticed you're already using a Windows Phone. That's smart. Okay, so they were smart enough to do that. Good for
this. This is good. It says, welcome. Tap Start Demo and see how Windows Phone makes it easier. This is actually freaking brilliant.
Yeah.
So tap or swipe. All right, so it's loading. Now, I'm going to go full screen on my full screen? I may not. This browser may not go full. Oh, yeah, there it goes. Look at that.
Yep. Now, that looks just like
that's wrong.
The Samsung phone you have, you know?
Yeah, it is. In fact, if I show you next to the Windows phone that I have, it's got somebody else's content in there, but it's the same phone. Isn't that funny? Look at that. What a way to do that. Of course, you can't put your content on it. I mean, it's not.
No, but one of the problems with Windows Phone is that it really comes to life when there's content. You know, when you log in with your Windows Live ID, it populates, you know, the People Hub and your email and all that stuff. And what this does is it at least emulates that, because when you see it in the store, you really don't get the full experience.
Right.
Plus, it gives them a chance. You can see that little blue circle thing.
Yeah. That,
a lot of the screens have a little bit of a hint.
Right.
You know, because you might not be used to, as that's an iPhone swipe. User, swiping yeah. to go left or right through screens or right. whatever. And it gives you little hints about, the, you know, some of the things you can do.
Unfortunately, Android also has a swipe, yeah. so it's confused. It's confused. This is really, and you know what? It feels snappy. It feels fairly like.
Yeah, not fairly, bad, you know, yeah. for a little website.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty doing, cool.
Yeah. That's just going to confuse the hell out of people.
Yep.
You put Windows on your iPhone? Whoa.
Oh, you put your iPhone in my Windows.
Oh. Your software, yeah, but so that, again, I'll say it again, is... what was it? A? Oh, now I forgot.
A, it's Akamai. So A-K-A?
A-K-A dot M-S, M-S slash W-P.
Slash W-P. Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah, it's good.
Neat. Our software pick of the week. I love this
a
one.
A last minute substitution. I originally had some kind of pragmatic, you know, software utility thing, but this one was just too fun. So Activision has released a version of the Zombies game, which was that Call of Duty game type that started back in the World at War game, and then Treyarch added it back again to Black Ops, and now they have a version for the iPad. So you may remember that there was a Call of Duty Zombies game for the iPhone before.
Right, right.
I don't remember if that was an iPad game too. I think it was just iPhone, but this one's iPhone and iPad. I have to say, having played it on both, it is in fact dramatically better on the iPad, because on the iPhone, at least for me, I have a lot of trouble reading the tiny text. And in the beginning, especially when you're learning how to play the game, there's another character talking to you, or, you know, through text bubbles. And I almost couldn't read it. It was just too small on the iPhone. But on the iPad, of course, it's not an issue. And the presentation is amazing. I mean, a lot of the UI in the game, not in the actual game, but in the menus and so forth, looks like an old comic book where it was printed in a newspaper, so you can almost kind of see things fading through from the other side of the page, and it's got a really neat presentation. But it's well done. You know, shooters are a little difficult on a touchscreen, but I think we've arrived at this system now where you hold the corners of the screen, and your left hand is used to move you back and forward, left and right, and then your right hand you kind of swirl around in the screen to change the look. You can look up and down and all that stuff. And, yeah, this is really well done. It's really, really well done. And if you're a fan of the zombie stuff, you know, I actually don't spend a lot of time playing the zombies games. My son probably lost a year of his life just playing zombies. But this is a really faithful rendition of that kind of game, and is just really, really well done.
It looks like almost like Castle Wolfenstein. I love it.
Yeah, it's not the same kind of game. It really, right. really what it is, it's a survival game. So you're basically in a room. There are some doors or windows that the zombies can get through. You shoot the zombies through those openings. They break through. You have to repair the breakage. You have a bunch of different weapons you can select as you gain points and so forth. It's basically like a classic video game of old, you know, like a Space Invaders or whatever. It's basically a race against time and just trying to see how long you can last.
Well, thank you, Paul. You've just given me my pick for iPad today.
Yeah.
I think I did that last time.
It's a good one. It's for an iPad game, it's $7. That's actually very expensive. Yeah. So it's at the high end. But you know what? This is, as you can tell just by looking at it, it's just a really, really well done and very professional game. It's really, really good.
Cool. And now, because we've bored Mary Jo Foley to tears, she gets to... Return the favor with her Enterprise Pick of the Week.
Okay, it may not bore you to tears. It's SQL Azure Data Sync Zombie version.
Yes, finally.
See, I knew I could bring it back. No zombies. SQL Azure Data Sync. But, you know, I think I've made this my Enterprise Pick of the Week before, but I'm bringing it back because Microsoft's really starting to put a lot of emphasis on this now. There's actually three brand new Channel 9 videos if you're interested in this stuff. And the reason you should care, I would argue, is SQL Azure Data Sync is what Microsoft is touting as the way to better sync up SQL Azure and SQL Server. So in one of these webcasts, they talk about how SQL Azure Data Sync can be used to share data between on-prem SQL and SQL Azure. They've got another one for enterprise cloud data sync. So, you know, this is for enterprise users who are kind of on the fence about the cloud, like, you know, I want to try SQL Azure in the cloud, but I'm so dependent on what's in SQL Azure on-prem. So Microsoft's trying to kind of smooth your way and give you a migration path and encourage you to try this technology, which is in preview form, to see if you can actually more easily get your data from your data center on-prem into the cloud. Are you looking for one of those videos?
I'm actually watching Mark Scarell, program manager, talk about...
See, if they had a zombie jump up in the middle of it, it might be a little more fun. But
I think Mark's doing a good job. All right, there you go. Yeah, Channel 9 has a whole series of videos, including some new ones that just came out a couple of days ago. So there you go.
So go watch those. Go watch those instead of watching zombies.
Right. Well, get something done. Be productive.
Get something done.
And now our code name pick of the week.
Okay, code name pick of the week is something to do with Windows 8, since we've had a very Windows 8 heavy show this week. The codename pick is Protagon, and Protagon was something that showed up in the early builds of Windows 8. It was the codename for a file system. And at first, when people heard about it, they were saying, oh, maybe this is the replacement for NTFS. No replacement for NTFS. Instead, people have now kind of been hinting around that it might be more like a content file system, or maybe even like a relational file system. And so the reason I made it my pick this week is there have been tips on the WinUnleaked site, which I saw from WinRumors, that said the real name of Protagon is going to be REFS, REFS. I'm kind of wondering if it means relational file system.
Ooh, that's interesting.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure this isn't yet activated in the developer preview, but when that beta comes out, I bet this will be in there.
That's not really an... Is it a new file system?
It's...
Or an update?
I think it's a supplemental file system to NTFS. So it's not replacing an existing file system. It's more like an additional file system.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes this exciting, thrilling, gripping edition of Zombies Meet Windows. Paul Thurrott is the editor-in-chief of the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. He's also the author of many great books, including The Windows Phone Secrets. You can get that in the bookstore today for your Windows, your brand new Windows phone. And what is that? Look at that. He's got a bumper sticker, or is that a magnet?
It's a bumper sticker.
I like it. It's got the Windows
phone. I'm going to drive around Boston and randomly put this on people's cars.
And see if they know what it is.
Right.
I think I saw that on my iPhone. No. And Mary Jo Foley, allaboutmicrosoft.com is the fastest way to get to her site, where she posts all the time on ZDNet's blog, allaboutmicrosoft.com. Thank you, Mary Jo.
Thank you.
Great to have you here. Thank you, Paul. And thank you all for joining us. We do Windows Weekly every Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 1900 UTC. And we will do it next week at that time, I believe, but I will be in France, so I think Iaz will be doing the honors next Thursday.
Okay.
All right. Thank you all for being here. You can download the show if you don't get it live, of course. We make all of our shows available in audio and video form at our website, twit.tv. Thank you all for being here. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly.